Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week, every Friday, I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, and honestly, just anyone who has a wonderful story to share and, you know, who are really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome John Livesay to the show. As a funding strategist, he helps CEOs craft a compelling pitch that engages investors in a way that inspires them to join a startup team. And he also hosts a successful pitch podcast with investors from around the world. And he is a pitch mentor at StartFest.net, the number one accelerator in upstate New York. And after a successful 20-year career in media sales with Condé Nast, where he worked across all 22 brands in their corporate division, GQ, Vanity Fair, Wired, W, and Vogue, he created and integrated programs for clients such as Lexus, Hyundai, and Guess. He also won Salesperson of the Year in 2012, across the entire company. His book, The Seven Most Powerful Selling Secrets, has been translated into Spanish and Russian. Today, John is going to share really what we all need to know, whether we're pitching to a company, whether we're pitching to a client, whether we're pitching to ourselves so we can sell our products and services with confidence. So he's going to share how to pitch with confidence, how to become a storyteller, how to get people to say yes fast, and how to go from invisible to irresistible. Good morning, John, and thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate you being with here today. I'm excited.
Oh, you're welcome, Denise. It's exciting to get to share the things that can help people become storytellers and get people to want to lean in and learn more.
You know, I think that's so important these days. It used to be back when I started on the Internet, kind of in the, we're going to call it the cave days, before we really, I'm giving a bit of my age away here, but, you know, I started basically, I got a computer science degree in 2000, 2001, and we barely had GUI, which the nerds among us recognize as graphical user interface, which is what, you know, gives us all those pretty pictures and all the, you know, the different things that we see now. That didn't exist when I started. And it wasn't that long ago. But my point is, even back then when we were able to put up websites that, you know, we could post a picture to it, it was always that kind of banker pose, wasn't it? You know, where you have the, you know, the three-piece suit, you have your hand on the back of a big leather chair, and you're very corporate. Now people want to know who you are. They want to know you, like, and trust you, don't they?
Exactly. You know, a lot of people make the mistake when they feel that they are selling a product, they forget the two first steps. You have to sell yourself first, and then you have to sell the company and the culture, and then you sell the product, but you sell the benefits of the product, not the feature. So if you just jump right into presenting what your product does without selling yourself first, no one's going to buy. And I tell people, forget selling, tell stories instead. And that makes people much more relaxed, because most people have a very negative impression of selling, and let alone selling themselves, they feel like they have to be really pushy. And when you sell and you push, that can push people away. But when you tell stories, you pull people into your message. So it's really important to become a storyteller. In fact, Plato said storytellers rule the world. So if you really want to connect with people emotionally, which is where all the selling occurs, and then they back it up with logic, become a storyteller. Tell the story of why you're so passionate about what you're doing in your life, and tell a story of how you overcame an obstacle, and you know, that's now why you have so much passion for what you're doing. When you tell stories, that's what people remember, and that's how they connect.
Is this something that is difficult? My observation is this is difficult for a lot of people to do.
Well, you know, it can be difficult, but it's like a skill, like anything else. You know, it's literally, storytelling is in our DNA, Denise. You know, when we were back in the caveman days, we would sit around the glow of the campfire and tell stories, and now we sit around the glow of PowerPoint presentations and tell stories. So it's not so foreign as you might think, but there are definite ways to tell a good story, and it, you know, there's exposition, who, what, where, when. You have to paint a picture to draw people in. Then you have to describe a problem, how you overcame it, and then what the outcome of that was. Those are the key elements to a really good story, much like what you see on a really great movie or a really great book. They take you on a journey.
So how did you learn to do this? Was this something that was very natural to you?
Well, I studied structure of storytelling, and I studied this way movies are written. You know, I took a class on learning about the structure of movies and classic movies like Casablanca, and why does that stay a classic, and what themes does it appeal to us as individuals on just an individual basis and a collective basis. And when you understand storytelling and understand its importance, then you start really practicing becoming a good storyteller. And now I'm at the place where I can not only tell good stories, ideally, but teach other people how to become storytellers. And that makes all the difference in the world. Let me give you an example. One of my clients had to pitch to get his startup funded, and he said he could use some help with his confidence, and that's really the key, is to come across confident but not arrogant. So my tip on building your confidence is to write down 4 to 5 moments of certainty in your life when you knew you nailed it. Let's say you went on a job interview and you knew you were going to get an offer, or you went on a date and you knew you were going to get a second date. Whatever it was that made you really confident, you stack those up, you write them down, and you write down how it felt, and that's what you put in your mind before you try something new, whether it's pitching for funding, going on an interview, whatever it is. And with Martin, he said, well, one of my moments of certainty is I remember that I grew up in the Netherlands, but I'm originally from South America. And when I turned 18, my parents took me back to South America, dropped me off naked in the Amazon jungle to survive for 2 weeks, because in my culture, that's the rite of passage into manhood. I said, wow, that gives me goosebumps. That's the opening to your pitch. Because when people are selling themselves, that's the kind of story that they're going to remember. I said, Martin, what did you learn in the Amazon jungle? He said, well, I learned how to focus and pivot and persevere. And I said, terrific. And we're going to take those lessons from the Amazon jungle to the concrete jungle of being an entrepreneur. And when he had that practiced and honed, he won a pitch contest and got the funding he was seeking, all because he had a really great story.
It's an astonishing story, but I have to tell you, I'm itching. All I can think is mosquitoes.
Right. We painted a picture and put you
sad?
In the jungle with him.
Ow.
Yes, that's what makes it memorable.
Good.
That's good storytelling.
I instantly went in there with him and said, oh, my gosh.
But let's break it down for your listeners a little bit, Denise. You know, when I talk about exposition, who, what, where, when, sometimes when Martin was first practicing that pitch, he would forget to say that it was a rite of passage in his culture to be dropped off naked in the Amazon jungle at 18. And I said, Martin, if you don't put that part in, it sounds like child abuse. So exposition is very important.
Right. Until you broke that out, I was thinking, oh, that is some really bad parenting. What the heck were they thinking? But then you immediately pulled me in with the rest of the story.
Right. So you need enough exposition to paint a full picture, not too little, not too much. Obviously, he had a problem to overcome. He did. He learned some great lessons from Amazon jungle, took it to the concrete jungle, and, you know, the outcome was he had won a pitch contest and got funding. So that's a really quick, short example of a good story about somebody where you're selling yourself as somebody who's got tenacity and grit without standing up and saying, I have tenacity and grit. You tell a story that shows it.
That makes sense. Before we go a little bit too far into this, I really want you to tell people who you are and why you do this. And did I miss anything in the intro that is important to this conversation?
Oh, well, that's very kind. No, I think you nailed it on the head. You know, one of the last things I did when I was at Condé Nast was I was supposed to find startups that Condé Nast could either use or invest in to help monetize their brands. And I started realizing that a lot of tech startups in particular are not very good storytellers. They're very left brain. They talk about how something works and the technology without explaining something concisely and compelling. And when I saw that only 1% of pitches got funded, I went, that's the problem I can help solve by teaching these tech CEOs how to craft a good pitch. And then people said to me, well, do you know any investors that I can go pitch once I have this great pitch? So that's what made me start my podcast, The Successful Pitch, where I've interviewed over 80 investors, and they share with me their criteria. And they say, John, you know, we are looking for good deals. If you have somebody that has a good pitch from working with you, we want to meet them. So now I can not only help people with the pitch, but make warm introductions to the right investors. And that's made all the difference. And I partnered with Judy Robinette, who's an amazing woman who sits on the board of Illuminate Ventures in Silicon Valley and Parag Ventures in New York. And she's an expert at networking and financials and strategy. So together, we've been able to get a lot of startups funded much faster than they could trying to do it on their own.
So I have to ask you, why did you leave corporate? And that's a big step. I mean, you have an illustrious career. So that had to been a little bit terrifying and a lot of exhilarating and maybe a judicious mixture of both. Which was it?
Yes, it was all that. I actually wrote a blog that your listeners can read later. It's called How to Conquer the Three Faces of Fear. And I think we all have fear when we try something new. I had fear launching a podcast. I'd never done that. And so for me, I found it really helpful to break down what am I afraid of. Let's put some faces on it. You know, the first fear is the fear of rejection, right? What if I ask people to be on my podcast and I can't get anybody to say yes because there are no episodes to listen to? It's new, right? But I've learned from being in sales for so many years that you cannot take rejection personally. So when you get over that fear of rejection, you go, okay, I'm next. What's the next fear? Well, there's the fear of failure. What if I get a guest on the podcast, but then nobody downloads it, and I'll be embarrassed, and I'll spend all this time and money, and it'll be a failure? And one of the guests on my podcast, Jay Samet, wrote a great book called Disrupt You, and he said, you know, failure is just feedback. Keep going until you get a zombie idea so great it won't die. So now I'm no longer afraid of failure. But the big one for me, Denise, was the fear of the unknown. The list of things I didn't know about launching a podcast was a mile long. What mic do I buy? How do I promote it? You know, what questions should I ask? It was on and on and on. And I literally found someone, Harry Duran, that's what his business is, done for you podcasting. So my suggestion to your listeners is when you have something that you don't know how to do and don't have really interest in learning it, collaborate. That's how you overcome the fear of failure.
And that makes perfect sense. And you know, even though I'm a virtual assistant industry expert, I'm an online business manager, I'm a web developer, and I can do almost everything I ask my team to do,
mm-hmm.
I had to learn that I had to collaborate with them, that I had to bring them in, get their feedback, find out if my ideas were actually valid, and then kind of outsource some of the things that I, honest to goodness, should not be doing just because
exactly.
I can't. And that's,
you know, there's things we can all do,
like,
but we don't like to do.
Okay.
Like for me,
right.
You know, my cleaning skills are minimal at best. So I, you know, hire someone who can clean much faster and much better than I can. Same thing with my taxes. I don't think I could ever really do a good job of my taxes, and I certainly wouldn't feel confident. So I hire a CPA to do my taxes. It's the same thing. You know, figure out what your sweet spot is, what you're really good at, and devote your time to becoming great at it, and let the other stuff go and delegate it.
Excellent advice. One of the things that I learned with my podcast, I've been doing this since 2009. Excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with my voice today. I was fine until I started this episode. So just kind of bear with me if I have to kind of choke all over you for a second.
Fine.
But I learned that even though I'm doing this virtually, I'm not meeting anybody face-to-face, and I'm not shy. I'm an introvert, but I'm not shy.
Mm-hmm.
I do get butterflies when I'm getting ready to start my episode.
And
I watch. So I do, and I think that's a good thing, because if I was very blasé about it, I don't think I would be very engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually
Well, I love that you brought that up,
Denise,
because I have a tip on that. The goal is not to get rid of the butterflies in your stomach, but to get them to fly in formation.
Oh,
so what's going on is,
yes,
just visualize them flying in formation. You want to get that nervous energy out of your stomach and into your gestures. When you make a gesture, when you move, even if you're doing it online or on the phone or what have you, like we are, still get that nervous energy out of your stomach and make a gesture while you're speaking, and that will walk, move, and tell yourself, oh, game on, the butterflies are here. This is my Olympic moment. This is my Super Bowl of meetings or interviews. It just lets you know that you should put on your, you know, 10 face is what I call it. Give it everything you've got.
Exactly. Do you know who Amy Cuddy is? She's, I think, the second most watched TED Talk. Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y.
Did she talk about the superhero pose?
The Wonder Woman pose. Honestly,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Every time I'm getting ready to go on, and I did it just now before you came
mm-hmm.
on, I did my Wonder Woman pose, and I took a deep breath, and I talked to my little butterflies and said, let's rock it. And here
yes.
we are. I love, so anybody who's listening, make sure you go watch her on TED Talk, Amy Cuddy. It is, and have a hanky at the end of it. You will not see it coming. I'm not going to spoil it, but just make sure that you can wipe away a few little tears.
Mm, that's good storytelling.
It's phenomenal storytelling, and it's in keeping with what you're talking about. So when did you understand that storytelling and helping other people tell their stories was really going to become a passion and a business for you? Because, look, I understand that it's got to be scary as all get out to jump off of the corporate train that you were on.
Yes.
I mean, that took some guts, didn't it?
It did. But, you know, I know from, you know, while I was at Condé Nast, I wrote a book, The 7 Most Powerful Selling Secrets, and I was able to test the waters that what I had to say was valuable and that people were interested in reading the book and hiring me to be a speaker. And I did some of it with the clients at Condé Nast, and then I did some of it outside of Condé Nast. So I had some proof of concept, if you will, that I had a business model and I was solving a problem. I think my advice for anyone is, if you have an idea, make sure that you can articulate who do I help and what problem do I solve. And as one investor told me on my podcast, if you're selling dog food, I want to see the dogs eating the food before I give you money to scale it. So test out your idea before you leave your secure situation to make sure that there's some proof of concept that people, A, need this, and B, are willing to pay for it.
Right. One of the biggest problems that people make, in my observation, again, is that they think what they have, their widget or their app or their product or their service, is for everyone.
Mm.
And I'm constantly telling people, everyone is not your target audience.
Right.
And you just articulated that beautifully.
Thanks. Well, one investor said to me, don't come in here and tell me you're going to boil the ocean. And I said, wow, I've never heard that phrase before. What does that really mean? He said, focus, boil a cup of water. And I went, got it. I mean, everybody probably forgets that Amazon started out just selling books. And they really made sure that that was proven before they started selling everything under the sun. So the same thing is true for your own business. The more you specialize, the better you get paid. You even think of doctors, heart surgeons. They don't open or close the patient. Somebody else does that. They just come in, do the heart, and then leave. So if you become a specialist, that's when you really have a niche and you get paid more.
And that does make sense, and I think a lot of people overlook that because, look, many of us, most of us have mad skills, whether we've identified them or shared them. We all have seriously mad skills at something. But with a lot of that comes the ability to do a lot of things. I have that problem. I can do a ton of stuff. I'm
mm-hmm.
a techie. I'm a nerd. I'm a stiletto-wearing nerd. I have an invisible pocket protector in my pocket.
I like that, stiletto-wearing nerd. See, that's good branding right there. We instantly get an image. Right, it's great.
Oh, really? I'll have
mm-hmm.
to put that into my branding.
Yes.
But the thing is,
yeah,
that I'm actually rebranding.
You know, I look
branding,
for those little nuggets
so.
That make you stand out, and that's it, because that's a picture, and it's a unique
oh, wow.
brand, and it's a, you know, it's a juxtaposition. You assume that someone who wears stilettos is not into tech, and vice versa, and so that's what makes that stand out. Yeah, it's all about focus. And
great.
Sometimes we think things that come really easily to us aren't important. But you just assume that it comes easy to everybody, and that's not the case
exactly.
at all.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that even in my own practice, my virtual assistants practice and my web development services company, that I'm having to really kind of narrow my focus and really offer more to my clients other than just kind of slapping it all up there and going, we can do this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
We can do a ton of stuff.
Yes.
But what I'm finding is that clients don't really know what it is that you're offering them. So I think that kind of goes back to boiling the ocean, which I love.
Boiling the ocean. Well, a lot of people don't know what they don't know. And so you need to, you know, what I always encourage people to do is come up with a list of questions. Does this sound like you? Are you a tech CEO struggling with your investor pitch? Are you pitching investors and getting a no and don't know why? If so, then watch this free webinar called Crack the Funding Code, right? So that pulls the right people in because you've got very specific problems that you're solving, and then they go, oh, my God, that does sound like me, and I have these challenges, and this could be for me.
Right. That's exactly right. So where when people really need to learn how to pitch, I mean, tell me – well, let me back that up a bit. Who are people pitching to in your experience? Are they pitching to investors? Are they pitching to – you know, maybe an online audience? How do you break that
well,
down?
Or yeah, typically when you're pitching for funding, you're pitching to either angel investors or venture capitalists. But the truth is you have to pitch to get people to join your team. You have to pitch to get customers. So you need to learn how to pitch, or AKA sell yourself and your vision, to make any of your business successful, whether you need funding or not.
Right. So let's go back to your specialty. So trying to find investors, and I know a lot of people are now going to GoFundMe. You know, I'm seeing a lot of that, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of it just is kind of stomach-turning for me. am I just in the minority here? It's like, no, I don't want to help you pay your rent.
Oh, like, no. You know, you have to have empathy, Denise, for the investor. The investor wants to see a 3-5 return on their investment in 3 to 5 years. So when you pitch an investor, it's a very different pitch than a pitch to get a customer. So if you only have 10 minutes to pitch an investor, you should not spend 5 minutes showing how great your product is, because they're not interested in becoming a customer. They want to know, what problem are you solving, how big is the market, and how am I going to get my money out? Is someone big going to buy you in 3 to 5 years, or how is this going to grow so fast that it's going to be so successful? Those are the kinds of questions you have to answer. It has nothing to do with, I need the money to pay my rent.
Yeah, I'm getting some pitches. I got one the other day that, on the face of it, I think it's probably okay, but there was something about it that really, it sent my spidey sense tingling.
Well, as you said earlier, you know, investors have to trust you, like you, and know you before they're going to invest in you. And that's why it's so important to explain who you are, why you're doing it, and what problem you're solving, and why you're uniquely qualified to execute this idea. And another big question to answer is, why now? Why is now the perfect time? And because if you think back, you know, if we didn't all have smartphones, Uber would never work. If the economy wasn't in trouble back in 2008, people would probably not have been open to the concept of Airbnb and renting out their place or a room, but they were open to other sources of income, so that's the timing was perfect for Airbnb and Uber with the phones.
Right. So excuse me, my voice is just shot. I suspect at the end of this, I won't be talking anymore at all today.
No.
So, like I told you in the green room, you're going to be doing most of the talking, and thank goodness for that. Thank you. But how do you get people to say yes fast? I mean, you've covered a lot of it, but let's just, do you have any examples of how you've helped people just kind of walk through what it is? Look, as far as I can tell, and I'm stuttering a little bit here because I'm trying to think it out before I say it, you need to lay out an awful lot of information. How do you get people to pull it all out and present it in a way that actually makes sense?
Sure. Well, it's
because you have
practice
to pull them out of
that's
their own
one
mind,
thing.
Don't you?
You have to what?
You have to pull them out of their own mind, don't you?
Yes, you need to grab their attention at the beginning of the pitch. You need a really strong opening, and then the really strong close is when you invite them to invest or buy or get another, you know, meeting. It's really important to have an objective of what's a successful outcome from this meeting in mind. And, you know, the best way to get people to say yes fast is to think of yourself as a co-pilot with the person that you're talking to. And that there's a flight plan. And when there's a flight plan, everyone knows you're getting on an airplane and you're going to go from L.A. to New York. And when they make the announcement, we're now landing, you don't suddenly stand up and go, what? We're landing? I'm so shocked. I thought we were just going to fly around aimlessly forever, right? You know you're landing. And the same thing is true when you're making a pitch or a sales presentation. You know that there's going to be a time when you're going to say yes or no. So having that in mind is very important. And one of the best secrets to getting someone to say yes is being comfortable with the silence in the room. So, for example, if I'm trying to sell you a home, and I said, Denise, would you like to buy this home? That's a closing question. And in my head, I've got all this self-talk going on. Oh, I really need this commission. If I have to show Denise another house, I'm going to lose my mind. So I can't tolerate all that self-talk. And I'll say, well, what if I throw the refrigerator in? Would you buy it then? Then you've let go of the chance for Denise to say yes or no. So I tell my clients, just say, would you like to buy the house? And then you tell yourself, I am patient and calm 3 times. And you send out that energy of giving the person time to decide. And I've had real estate agents double their sales just from that one secret of when you become comfortable with the silence in your head, that's what allows you to become comfortable with the silence in the room.
And they do need time to think about it.
Sure.
They
but
really
you have
do.
To be calm
I mean,
enough
give
to
you
let
an ex-
them have that time.
Right. Give you an example of really bad salesmanship. My former husband wanted a Mercedes. He had one, but he wanted a convertible, which, frankly, I hated. It felt like I was sitting on the ground with my butt on the ground. Mm-hmm. I hated the thing. But he had already made the decision to buy it, but he wanted me to go with him to the dealership to, you know, kind of verify that it was okay with me. I didn't
right.
care if he wanted it. He should have gotten it. But this is what really bothered me about this salesperson. He honed in on me like I was a decision maker. I was not. The deal was pretty much already made. And he had me running for the door. I promise you, I couldn't take one more sales pitch from this guy. I finally just told him, it's his car. You talk to him. And I bolted.
Yeah.
I mean, he bothered me enough, I almost called it off just because I couldn't stand him.
Wow.
But my former husband really wanted that car.
Yeah. That's where we talked about, how do you go from invisible to irresistible to your potential customers, potential investors. It's all about reading the room and not giving the same pitch to every single person and realizing that each person has a different way of processing information. Each person has a different approach that they like. Some people like, give me just the details really fast. I'm in a hurry. Some people like to be wooed a little bit, and they like you to ask some questions about themselves before you even start talking about the car or whatever the product is. So that's the biggest problem is, in order to become, just like in dating, right? If you are invisible, where you go to a party and somebody you're attracted to doesn't even notice you, you're invisible. But you can't go from invisible to irresistible. There's several rungs on the ladder in between. So next rung up from invisible is insignificant. And that's, quite frankly, in the dating world, not much better, right? They see you, but you're insignificant. And from an investor standpoint, you're invisible or insignificant when you don't really have more than just an idea, right? Or you don't have anybody else on your team, or you don't have any proof of concept that somebody actually wants to buy this product. You haven't done any testing or any kind of minimal viable product to show that what your idea would be. But then you get up to the interesting rung of the ladder. And in the dating scenario, that would be, let's say you are at a party and you say something funny or clever. Oh, that person might think, I'm interested to learn a little bit more about you. Doesn't mean I'm going to go on a date with you, but I'm interested. You're at the 50% mark. Same thing in investors, like, I'm interested to know more about this idea, but I'm certainly not ready to write a check. And then the next rung up is intriguing. And this is where you really have honed in on your message. I literally had a proposal to someone that was interested in hiring me, and I gave him a proposal, and he asked some questions, and he wrote back, he goes, I'm intrigued. And I'm like, almost there, almost irresistible. And the irresistible is where people have a fear of missing out. This deal is so great, there's a limited number of products available, let's say, whatever that is, or there's a limited number of places to get this information. I can't miss this opportunity. That's where you become irresistible.
And you see that in really good online marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the whole scarcity fear factor thing. I think it's a lot more subtle than that.
Yes.
So could you kind of walk us through the difference between going, I've got this widget and there's only 12 left. You have to buy it now before midnight, which frankly I think bothers people.
Yeah,
and
well, that's the whole
TVC
way of selling something,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
We only have four more left.
But there is something to be said for this is only for a limited time, and we're only working with X number of people in this particular webinar or this particular workshop or whatever that is. Because, you know, like an Hermes bag, for example, it's crazily high-priced, expensive, and part of the allure is there's a limited edition of that. Same thing with art. So there is a mindset that people like something if they know that it's not always going to be available or that they're going to be one of the few people to get something. So that all depends on what your offer is and what your product is on how you craft that element into your overall pitch. In the case of pitching investors, if you have more than one investor interested in you, whether you show examples of that on Shark Tank, I interviewed Charles Michael Yim, who got all five sharks to give him money because they were afraid of missing out. He became irresistible to them. They didn't want to miss out on this opportunity. He had the breathometer, which measured whether you were drunk or not by breathing into something, whether you just get behind the wheel of a car. And he was irresistible because they loved him, they loved his product, and there was, you know, all this social proof going on. Well, I'm in, I don't want to miss out. So that's how you become irresistible.
So can you give us some examples of people that you've worked with without names?
People I've worked with who are irresistible?
Yeah. How you took them from going through all four stages, pitching with confidence,
right.
Becoming a
storyteller. Well, I'll give you a name. We worked with a client named Cole Smith. He has got a company called Trezit, and it's an application that helps keep the school safe during medical emergencies or, God forbid, another shooter. It instantly notifies all the first responders and parents and also gives a floor plan that's color-coded with the rooms of where the problem is so the ambulance knows exactly where to go or the SWAT team. He was invisible to investors. He didn't even have a pitch deck, and we got him a pitch deck. We worked with him on some financial projections, had him practice his pitch, and then we introduced him to an angel investor we knew who liked the idea, invited Cole to go pitch to his angel group, and he had 10 minutes to pitch and had a 10-minute Q&A, and we had prepped him for both, and he nailed it and got the second date, which was the whole point of the pitch, just to get invited back. And the second meeting was 10 minutes again, but now it was a 30-minute Q&A with more angels in the room. And he got into due diligence where they were really, you know, they're interested in giving him the money and they're just checking all the information that he said to make sure it's accurate and talk to customers, et cetera. But we also then took him to the New York angels and he said, I'm here not because I need the money. I have another offer, but you have a reputation for really good mentoring and connections. And they said, yes, we know people at the FBI. This could scale really fast. So they were afraid of missing out, and he became irresistible to them. And that's an example of how we took somebody from invisible to irresistible.
It's truly a phenomenal story, but it breaks my heart that he had to create this.
I know. Well, he's got a military background. He's got five children, and he was compelled to figure out a way to keep the school safer. So instead of just sitting and watching the news, he did something to make it better.
That truly is a phenomenal story. So, but before we get a little bit too far, describe what a pitch deck is to our audience, because I'm sure a lot of people are going, okay, but what is that?
Sure. It's typically 10 slides that talk about, you know, who you are, because they really invest in the team more than the idea, and that's a big aha for most people. What problem you're solving, how you're solving it, how big is the market, what's your competition? You know, a lot of people make the mistake of saying they don't have any competition, and investors roll their eyes and say, well, then you don't have a market. But what's your barrier to entry to competition, right? What do you have, a patent in place or some other branding that keeps you ahead of the competition? And then how much money you need and what you're going to use it for. So it's, you know, 10 slides typically and 10 minutes to explain all of that.
So how do you prepare people when you have clients come to you? It sounds to me like you really go very, very, very in-depth with these people. Are there any particular points that people should be aware of when they're trying to kind of mentally prepare themselves either to hire you, work with you, or find someone like you, or try to – I don't know that I would suggest that people do it on their own, depending on what level they're trying to do, but
right.
How do you work with people?
One of our clients, Denise Terry, who's got an artificial intelligence platform to help women who are pregnant, she said, I'm so frustrated. I can't get in the right room with the right investors. I'm wasting time. I feel like I'm trying to climb Mount Everest without a GPS. And I said, well, Judy, Robinette, and I are your Sherpas, and we get you to the top. So that's really our ideal client, someone who's tried it on their own, realized that they need some help not only with the pitch but getting into the right room. And we have a free webinar you can watch called Crack the Funding Code. And if your listeners want to just text the word funding to 66866, I will email them a free PDF of the 3 mistakes to avoid when you're pitching. And you can always listen to my podcast, The Successful Pitch, and you'll be able to watch the webinar from there, or just go to my website, johnlivesay.com, L-I-V-E-S-A-Y.
Okay, give me that number again because I'll be texting you.
Yes, it's 66866, and then you just text the word funding, F-U-N-D-I-N-G.
Funding, got it. You will be hearing from me. Okay, so how long have you been doing this? I mean, when did you leave corporate and decide that this was where you needed to be?
I've been doing this now since 2013. And Yeah, I wrote the book 12 years ago, so depends where you are in the path, but I've been, the podcast has been going on over a year and a half now, and we've been working with people on Crack the Funding Code for almost a year, so yeah, it's great.
And you've got all these great clients, so clearly you did some serious preparation before you just kind of jumped off the bridge.
Oh, yes. I did a deep dive and invested in learning how to, create a great Facebook ad campaign. And really, testing images and testing headlines and defining who your avatar is and talking to people about, what's your pain points and what are you looking for and what would you pay for?
And this is something I would like to ask you, because a lot of people say, he makes it look so easy. He's been doing it. He's got these great clients. He's got these great stories.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like for you to share now is what you did, the preparation, the mental preparation, the business preparation, just the point where you got to where you were confident that you could step away and do this and do it big. So would you mind sharing with our audience, rather, kind of the educational path that you put yourself through to get where you are now? Because I think that's doing everything that you're talking about is important, but I think your story is just as important.
Well, I think it's really important to surround yourself with people who believe in you, and whether that's your spouse, your friends, your family, and not surround yourself with people who are fear-based, but surround yourself with people who believe in you and believe in your vision and say, look, you've always been successful in all these other things. What would make you think that you can't be successful in something else, right? So that's, stacking your moments of certainty and then just preparing as much as you can. So I took workshops and classes on how to be a really great consultant and a really great coach. And, there's a whole, skill set to learning that. You have to learn how to attract the right clients, convert them, and then how are you going to deliver that product? So just being aware that there's 3 stages right there and realizing you're going to split your time among those 3 activities. I've worked with Todd Herman, who's an excellent productivity coach, to make sure that you're spending your time on things.
I just downloaded his book. It is on my list of things to read. And I got that off of your Facebook page, so thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so glad. Good. Yes. So I've surrounded myself with experts who knew things that I didn't know. And then, the joy of, taking the leap to do the podcast, Judy Robinette was my second guest, and now we've become business partners. So you never know where something's going to lead you to.
Let's talk about the podcast, because that, I think it is so important to have a podcast. I really do. Not just because I have one, but because of the reasons that I have one.
Mm.
And one of my reasons is that I'm a complete and total introvert. Truly. I really am. I'm not shy, not in the slightest, but I am a committed introvert. So committed that, when Amazon can deliver 30 pounds of fresh crawfish and cabbage to my door, I'm selling my car. I'm done. I'm not coming out anymore. That's a slight exaggeration, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am incredibly camera-phobic, have been since I was 5 years old, and I do not put my picture on the internet, and I'm never going to. That's just who I am. I'm very private, and you put a camera in my face, it's not going to end well. Let's just leave it there. So,
okay.
It's my mother-in-law about that. Hers went into the picture, sweet tea. But I don't like it. I don't like having my picture taken, and I'm not going to do it. So I started, that's a long story, but I started my radio podcast because I'm not going to, I wasn't going to do the whole, you've got to put your picture out there, you've got to be on YouTube, you've got to do this. No, I'm going to do it my way. And this is a great way to get my voice heard, and more importantly to me as it evolved, I get to meet people like you. I get to meet people from all over the world who have these fascinating stories and wonderful tips and advice. And honestly, I learn more from you guys than I do practically anything. So that was the genesis of my podcast. And I think so many of these podcasts that are coming out right now are really important in terms of, you know, how we teach, how we communicate. Isn't that why you
started yours?
Well,
it's a big
way
that people like to consume information now. You
right,
know, they like to listen
right.
to it in the car, working out, taking a walk, whatever it is. And I think, you know, again, it's all about playing to your strengths. If you don't like being on camera, then don't be on camera. If you like
exactly.
to write, then write blogs. If you don't like to write blogs, then start a podcast. Figure out what is your best source of expressing yourself and then use that medium. For me, I like to talk on podcasts, but I also like to be on camera and I also like to write. So I like all three, but not everybody does. So that's, you know, it's your own particular preference on how you like to do it. But the main reason I started my podcast was I literally had my clients telling me I want warm introductions to investors, and that was the best way for me to become in relationship and network with investors was to interview them, to not only hear what they look for when they hear a pitch so I could coach people better on that, but then make those warm introductions that are so needed to help get them funded. So I agree with you. Interviewing people and meeting people literally from around the world that you would never have met, whether it's Judy Robinette. I interviewed Guy Speer, who lives in Zurich, and he and another investor paid over $600,000 to have lunch with Warren Buffett at a charity auction, and he wrote a book about that. So what a fascinating person and conversation to have and learn about people's experiences that you would never hear about before. So I definitely enjoy the podcast and getting people to share with me, you know, what's important to them.
Exactly. And I think what we need to make sure our audience understands, it's a great way for you to become a really great connector. You've done it.
Oh,
yes. I've done
it. Well, in
it.
Fact, Judy and I have started a private Facebook group for all of the guests of my podcast because we realize that a lot of investors know each other within their city, but they don't know investors in other parts of the world. So now we have a place where everyone I've ever interviewed can connect with each other. And so then that just builds on itself.
That is a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. But, you know, so many of my guests are always looking for other guests. And I'm constantly saying, oh, you should interview so-and-so and you should interview, you know, this person. So that is actually a really great idea. Is it a private group or a secret group?
Yes. You have to be a guest on the podcast in order to be in the group.
Makes perfect sense. So just kind of randomly tell me what's going on in your mind. You know, how do you want our audience to connect with you?
Well, besides texting the word funding to 66866 and listening to my podcast, The Successful Pitch, I would encourage anyone who's looking for funding to watch the free webinar, Crack the Funding Code, which you can find the tab on my website or on Judy Robinette's website, and let us know how we can help you.
Excellent. Okay, so I really want you to share some stories with me. So do you have any, you know, any particular stories that really kind of stick in your mind about how you helped somebody, you know, how you really took somebody from, oh, my God, this is terrifying to, you know, standing in front of investors and coming out with a, we did it. I would love to hear those stories.
Well, one of the stories is, a friend of mine had an 8-year-old boy who was always coming in last at gym class. And she was a single mom and really didn't know how to coach him to run faster. So I said, well, a friend of mine, Jay Kerwin, runs a boot camp in L.A. with his wife. And let me have him come all dressed up in his military garb and see if he can coach him for an hour. And he said, okay, Max, let me see you run. Max runs. He goes, Max, is that as fast as you can go? And Max shrugs his shoulders. He goes, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, Max, what would you give that? And Max goes, what? I don't understand. So Jay goes, all right, well, this is me running at level 5, and Jay runs. Now, Max, I'm going to put my 10 face on and give it everything I got and run really fast. All right, Max, put your 10 face on and run. And Max does. And he goes, oh, I'm faster. And the next day at school, he doesn't come in last. And I see him. He goes, hey, you know what the secret to running is? It's putting on your 10 face. I go, it's the secret to everything. So that little story is one of the tools that I give my clients before they go in front of an investor. Put your 10 face on. Hold the superhero pose. Stack your moments of certainty. Get those butterflies to fly in formation. And that's what allowed Cole to get not one but two offers from the investors that he pitched because he had the confidence he needed with all the preparation to soar and be successful.
So it really is a mindset.
Yes. Mindset plus preparation and practice.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, practice. Let's talk about that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Don't wing it. And, you know, someone says for every minute you practice, you should practice an hour. So if you're going to give it a 10-minute pitch, you should practice 10 hours. So you know that pitch backwards and forwards. You can be stopped in the middle of the pitch with a question and not get thrown off, not be robotic. Pitch it in front of many, many people so that your body doesn't get so frozen when you're in front of a room of people. So you need to pitch standing up. You need to pitch practicing to your friends and family, but you also ideally would pitch and practice in front of people who don't know you and see if what you said makes sense to them.
Now, how would you find those people?
Oh, you'd be surprised. You can ask a friend who's having friends over for to watch a TV show, and you're like, hey, do you mind if I just come in for 10 minutes and practice my pitch to you and your friends? And, you know, people are like, sure, we might learn something. Let's hear it.
But you have to take a pizza.
You have to take a pizza.
Right. There's bribery involved. So I love, now, and we're not talking, I know you're talking about pitching to investors, but I'm thinking a little bit more laterally probably, and thinking that if you're going to be doing webinars, which are really important to help build your business and get your sales funnels up and running, that you should be practicing those as well, right? Instead of just getting in front of your microphone and reading it and going, here
you
go.
You can't be caught up in the technology going bad and not throwing you off your game, and you have to really know your content so that you come across confident and knowledgeable and don't get flustered.
Right, right. Okay, more stories. I'm loving these stories.
Well, I mentioned Denise Terry. She's got an artificial intelligence platform to help women who are pregnant. The exciting part of what's happening with Denise is she's been connected to some investors from China. So her pitch deck literally got translated into Mandarin. And the Chinese are interested not only in investing in getting this AI platform used here in America, but also in China, because now there's new laws that you can have more than one child. So you can imagine how much the U.S. investors are excited about the potential of not only the U.S. people, women using that, but pregnant women in China. So that's how something gets really big and really global, is when you open your mind up to who else could use this and who else could, you know, be interested in funding this. And it all comes from your connections. Your network is really your net worth.
You know what I wanted to ask you? Do people ever come to you who don't already have, I mean, they may have some kind of muddled ideas or, you know, just, oh, I think I can do this. I think, you know, have you ever had clients where you have to just literally take them from the idea, they haven't really done much with it, and walk them through the process?
Well, we typically say that you're in the invisible, insignificant level. We typically like to work with people who are already at the interesting level, and we take them from interesting to intriguing to irresistible.
So is there a process where they can go to get to that level where they can work with you? Do you tell them, listen, do this, and then come back?
Sure, there's all kinds of incubators and accelerators that people can join, and that's where you take your idea and test it out and see if there's a product market fit, if anybody's interested in using it, or get some help, you know, getting your product, you know, if it's an app, getting it developed to the point where you have a minimal viable product or you can actually have a demo ready, that type of thing.
I wanted to ask you, too, about mentorships and masterminds. A lot of my guests talk about those. Are these something that you involve yourself in?
Yes, well, I'm the pitch mentor at StartFast.net, which is the accelerator up in upstate New York. And I definitely mentor those founders that are fortunate enough to get into that program because it's very competitive, as you can imagine. They only take 5 every summer. But, yes, the more you can find masterminds where, you know, you're not the smartest person in the room, that's very valuable information.
No kidding. I mean, I firmly believe in both. Let's go back and talk about your book. I know it was written a while back. Are you going to – would you share a bit about what the book is about?
Sure. I take metaphysical principles like Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, that kind of philosophy, and apply it to selling. So one example I gave you was, you know, being comfortable with the silence in your head so you become comfortable with the silence in the room. The number one way to become comfortable with the silence in your head is through meditation. and mindfulness, staying in the moment, is really, really big and popular now with a lot of tech executives in Silicon Valley, because they realize if I meditate, I'm much more productive and I'll make more money. So there's a bottom line reason to meditate, and I don't really care what the reason is, but they're really seeing a value in that. Another big part of what I do is teach people how to not take rejection personally. And the way to do that, of course, is to not ever reject yourself. And so many times when people say no to you, you get so devastated and you say, well, I'm not a good person, I'm not a good salesperson, I don't have a good product. And you just go, oh, that's just not a fit. And so you can't be attached to the outcome. That's a very sort of Zen Buddhist metaphysical philosophy. As you stay
right,
in the moment, you know, when you swing a golf club, for example, and you hit a ball, you know, it's gone, right? You would like it to go in the hole, but you're not attached to it having to go in the hole for you to be happy. Same thing is true with a sale. You're not attached to any one person having to buy from you or hire you or invest in you in order for you to be happy. And when you let go of being so attached to, it has to be this person at this moment in this particular way, you're much more relaxed, and that's ironically when you're most attractive.
And I found that to be true. I mean, if you hang on to something so tightly, I find it actually somehow, at some level, repels the other person or people. It's just how
Well, again,
it works.
You just go back to dating, right? Nobody wants somebody who's so desperate and needy. You want someone who's choosing to be with you, wants to be with you, but doesn't need to be with you. That's a big distinction.
It really is. And you said something about meditation. Do you have... Look, I hate to admit this, but I have admitted it before. I can't meditate. I've got a squirrel brain. And I will be trying to meditate, and all of a sudden I'm making the Thanksgiving grocery list. It may be June,
yes.
But I'm making, I'm, you know, mentally buying my turkey. Or I fall over and drool. Meditation does not seem to work with me. Do you have any particular kind of meditation advice that you give somebody like me with a squirrel brain?
Sure. Well, a lot of people have challenges with that. I think there's some things you can do physically. For example, you can close one nostril and breathe in through that nostril and then switch it and do that times. That can be your meditation. And you're so focused on your breathing, that keeps your squirrel brain from kicking in.
Oh.
So if
I
you
might
just do
choke,
that 10
but I'll try
times,
it.
That can help you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one tip.
Darn. Now, I have found that if walking meditation kind of works for me, if I'm on the treadmill or if I'm, you know, walking around the neighborhood with my dog, I will just deliberately kind of zone out and see what comes in.
Yes.
And that kind of works.
And just being mindful, being really in the moment. So when you take your dog for the walk or you take a walk by yourself, don't take your phone with you.
Oh, I never do.
Start looking at things going, oh, look at that flower. Look at that branch. How does the sun feel on my face? Be as present as you can, and that is a way to ground yourself in the moment. Because that's the whole point of meditation, it's just to quiet everything down so that you're really present.
And I want to talk about that, too, because focus, I think, is a big thing. I mean, we are constantly bombarded, constantly. I mean, I cut off cable 2 or 3 years ago because it just... For one, it was expensive. I don't really like to watch TV. I don't enjoy it much. I'd much rather read. And honestly, I started realizing that every time I had that stupid television on, that at some point my stomach started hurting. I was experiencing literally what I had to identify as a low-level sense of dread when I watched the news. And it's like, ooh. So, you know, I gave that up, and, you know, I'm a much happier person, but what I'm finding is because you mentioned phones, I try to keep mine away from me as best as I can when I'm working or even when I'm driving. I will not answer it. But we're bombarded, you know, TV, internet, just Facebook, everything. So how do you have any kind of advice that you can give us about focus, being mindful? Because I think that is huge. I think it's a big, big step that people need to take to constantly be aware that they need to be mindful.
Yes.
Does it become a practice
one of the big
or
things,
a habit?
You know, I think being focused is all about just that. Don't try to multitask. In fact, there's all this research that's out now that multitasking makes you less and less productive. The more things you keep, let's say you start to write an email and then you get a ping on your phone that somebody posted something on Facebook and you go, oh, I'm going to go check that. And you go check that, and then you see, oh, there's another little video here on Facebook I want to watch. And then by the time you go back to your email, you've lost so much time, you have to re-go, oh, what was I thinking again? And you've lost your place. So when you're going to focus on one thing and get that done, because that's how people go, I didn't get anything accomplished today. I got 10 things halfway done, but nothing completed. You must figure out the night before what you're going to get done the next day. What are my top three things? And I'm going to dedicate specific time. I like to say if it doesn't get scheduled, it doesn't get done. So from 9 to 10, I'm doing this interview with Denise, and no matter what else happens, short of the house catching on fire, that's all I'm focusing on, right? So that's really a key step, is figure out what are your top three things you need to get done and make sure that you are really adamant that nothing else is going to distract you while you're doing that.
I had to learn that because, and I don't know if it's a female thing, it may be, but we tend to be multitaskers extraordinaire, which, as you say, is not a good thing. And I actually used to pride myself on that. You know, I could be doing dishes and, you know, building a website practically at the same time. And then I realized that I was going to bed at night going, what the heck did I get done? And I was beating myself up, which is not good. I mean, I was really beating myself up, and I was irritated and, you know, just mad at myself all the time because I was not getting stuff done. So I do now pretty much what you're talking about. I've determined what my big three steps are. For, you know, the next day, I have to know, am I working on this website? Is this one, you know, is this bringing in money right now?
Exactly.
Is this just, you know, piddling around? You have to work on the money makers, obviously, or the ones that you promised, because you never want to make, you know, break a promise. And then I segment intend. You know, I will sit down and say, okay, you know, at noon, once we're off of this call, I've got 60 minutes to do this, 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 and this, and then after that, and I will actually schedule in breaks. Because if I don't,
breaks are very important.
I'm such a nerd, I know.
No, like every 15 minutes, you're supposed to take a 10-minute break, get up, walk around, and you'll be much more productive than if you just worked 2 or 3 hours straight through something.
That's exactly right. Yesterday, I took an unscheduled break. It was a 2-hour break, as it turned, but I live in the deep south, and, you know, our weather here is... Either you have 5 days of glorious weather, and then it goes into the hot or hot as hell seasons, and you just don't go out much. You really don't. Well, yesterday the humidity was not bad. I was tired. My brain was wandering, and I went outside and I got underneath my pecan trees. And I'm telling you, I read a book, and you know, for 2 hours I did nothing but my cat was on my lap. I read a book, and when I came back in, I kicked butt. But I needed that break. I really did.
Well, and you were meditating, sitting under the tree. You were in nature, all that good stuff. So that's a great example of all that.
And I was
together.
Very grateful. You know, I was expressing gratitude to whoever was listening. I mean, it was really just one of those, you know, kind of moments where I'm going to look back on that 2 hours with extreme fondness because I was very happy.
And treat yourself to it again. Yes.
Exactly. So it's going on my list of, you know, those moments. Listen, we are running out of time. This went fast. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, listen, was there anything else that you wanted to kind of touch on that we didn't cover here?
No, I think we've pretty much covered everything. I think the last thing I would leave your listeners with is the key to success is confidence, and the key to confidence is preparation. That's one of my favorite quotes from Arthur Ashe. So if you do all those things, you will be successful and you will be confident.
Absolutely. He was a tennis player, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember him. Well, John, thank you so much for being with me here today. Oh, before we go, be sure to tell people where they can find you on the web and repeat the text number, if you would.
Sure. JohnLivesay.com, L-I-V as in Victor, E-S-A-Y. Text the word funding to 66866. You get a free PDF of 3 mistakes to avoid when you pitch.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for being with me here. It was phenomenal to get to meet you and interview you. And by the way, if you ever need any guests, I have a ton of them. So just let me know and I'll share
those.
Thanks,
Denise. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have a couple in particular that I think would really be great for you to chat with. So anyway, I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. I had some big aha moments, and thank you for that. And for our audience, the show... 60 seconds. The show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and John Livesay, and I will see you next week. John, thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.